This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, a weekly podcast hosted by myself, Hannah Hickinbotham. Full of Beans is here to share the unheard voices of those who are living with, supporting, researching, or working in the field of eating disorders. Each conversation aims to bring a different perspective and understanding so that together we can learn, advocate, and connect to realise we are not alone in our struggles and that recovery is possible. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. And just a gentle reminder that these episodes are not a replacement for therapeutic support. So if you are struggling, please do reach out and know that there will always be someone there to listen. And finally, thank you to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital, for your continued support. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Anne Richardson. Anne is a registered nutritional therapist, lecturer, and supervisor. She has been practicing for more than 10 years and exclusively works in the field of disordered eating. Anne suffered with anorexia in her teens and now draws from her lived experience to blend her knowledge of nutrition with her CBT skills. She works with people all over Europe to help them achieve food freedom. She is also invested in helping other practitioners work with disordered eaters, as she recognises that general nutritional advice can be extremely damaging to disordered eaters. Anne is also a mum, a maker of all things, and especially a keen baker. I really enjoyed this week's episode with Anne as we went through a lot of eating disorder myths that I know I believed when I was struggling, and with the constant messaging on social media can be really, really hard to know what the truth is. So I really hope that you enjoy this episode and it gives you some insight into why these myths are not actually true. Hello and welcome back to the Full of Beans podcast. Today I have got Anne Richardson with me on the podcast, so it's so nice to have you, Anne. How are you doing today?
I'm really good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, it's really lovely. Instagram is such a weird place, isn't it? Because I feel like we've had so many interactions and chatted lots, but never actually spoken to each other in person.
No, you're totally right. I spoke to someone earlier who I have met on Instagram, but I can't remember how. And we met on Zoom earlier for the first time. And it's been really lovely. And we feel like we really know each other. Mm-hmm. And we kind of do, but we've never met in person. And I have met also in person a few people that I met on Instagram, and it's kind of it's really nice when that happens. So maybe one day we'll actually meet in the flesh.
Absolutely. Yeah, I remember going to the Dump the Scales march this year, and there was quite a few people that I'd met on Instagram that I hadn't met, and then everyone was like, wow, you're really short, because I'm 5'1" and I don't think people expect it.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so did you want to introduce yourself for the listeners?
Yeah, sure. I'm a registered nutritional therapist, and I exclusively work in the field of disordered eating, and I help them recover from their eating disorders, essentially.
So when you're working with clients, is your role to kind of help them with their relationship with food, or are there other aspects that you help people with as well?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I blend a few things, because I use nutrition, but I also have been studying CBT for the last however many years. And so my practice is a blend of nutrition and CBT. So what it means is that I mostly do nutrition, but it's CBT informed. So the way I will approach kind of problems will be from a CBT angle, but I've got the nutritional knowledge. I work in tandem with dietitians, and Very typically, because I work with a lot of young people, a young person will be under the care of an eating disorder team or CAMHS, and a dietitian will put together a plan, and it's a very detailed plan. And the plan is always great. And my job is not to touch the plan. I could, but it's not appropriate because I don't want to confuse everyone. My job is to support the young person into implementing that plan. So instead of saying, no, you shouldn't be having like an apple for your snack, you should be having more, this is bad advice. I would say, you know, having, I'm going to go with what my son just had, a tea cake with butter and honey is a great snack. And now what is it about this snack that you find really tricky? And they might say, well, it's the carbs, it's the sugar. And then we will have like a big conversation about that. So my job isn't really to change the plan, but to help them implement it, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's why your blend of CBT sounds so important there, because it's that skills based, it's practicing things. And like you said, you know, what is it about this food that you find scary, or why is it a fear food? What's holding you back from having it? So actually sometimes just being given a meal plan, there's actually a lot of barriers to them being able to eat the meal plan and kind of your understanding around that.
Yeah, and I have a lot of sympathy for the people working for the NHS because they've only got so many resources and so much time. So the plan is always good. You know, I've seen many, many plans in my career, and, you know, it's kind of always more or less the same, not because they just give you the same stuff, but because that's the stuff that does work. But what they don't always have, depending on where you come from, is the time to hold that person to implement the plan. And sometimes that's where it goes a bit wrong, because they get given this plan, they are told to go home, and sometimes the parents can do that, can help, but sometimes they can't, and then the person might not be able to implement the plan. So I'm kind of there to hold a hand and to go, okay, let's do this. I mean, the plan says, you know, let's say typically 3 meals, 3 snacks, 2 desserts, and you're at the moment, you're refusing to have this, and you're having, you know, like 2 meals. So how are we going to get to the end, which is your 3 meals, et cetera, et cetera? So let's have another snack. Having 2 meals and a snack isn't correct. I'm not saying that's correct. I'm saying let's get there. And I'm going to hold you together. We're going to, you know, go on that path together. And sometimes we'll stop off, you know, to rest on our path, and sometimes we'll go a bit faster, and sometimes we might just go back a little bit. That's kind of basically what I do.
I think it depends on the person, but ultimately, if you say to somebody you've got to go from eating the bare minimum to now 3 meals, 3 snacks, it's quite a big jump. And sometimes I think that can be quite scary for people to do that. So actually taking those incremental steps, you know, as long as somebody's not in a medically compromised situation, of course, then actually that can be really beneficial to recovery, because it's more of a long-term recovery goal rather than short-term scaring somebody and them running away.
Yeah, sure. And often I see people who have on their plans, you know, like typical desserts like crumble and stuff. And then they go, there's literally no way I could eat that. I've also never eaten that as a child. And sometimes, you know, the parents would say, you know, we don't really have those things. Sometimes it is part of the problem, to be honest, but let's not go there. And so, you know, of course, if I ask them to have crumble every day, it's not going to work. So we might need to go there very slowly, and it might need to be just Greek yogurt to start with, which is not totally appropriate, but that's kind of better than nothing. And then we can move on to something a bit more scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really nicely leads us on to kind of what we wanted to talk about today, which was a lot of myths around food. And I imagine that when you're working with your clients, you know, a lot of these myths might come up and you help unpack them. So let's start with the first one, which this one I got sent about 5 times in different.
Okay.
So I think
so
this is a
big
particular one. And it's all about timings. So
okay.
It's kind of eating past a certain time, and if you do that, then you're more likely to gain weight. There was more specific things about kind of if you have pasta for dinner rather than at lunch, you're more likely
pasta?
To. It's always pasta. So maybe we can actually break that into two.
Yeah.
In terms of that eating, you know, is there a certain point that we have to stop eating, or, you know, if we eat pasta at a time, are we going to gain more weight? And then maybe we talk about pasta afterwards, because I think that's another separate conversation.
Yeah. Okay, so where do I start with this? Okay, I'm going to start by saying that a lot of the time, those myths have a grain of truth. And I think that's why they stick. And that's why we believe in them to start with. And I remember hearing that as well, that, you know, about the timing. And that's not when I was learning about nutrition. It was sort of like, you know, on the grapevine, and then obviously on the internet. And I see that very often, and people bring that to me. There is a little grain of truth. If you eat later, it's not great, but not for the reason that you think. It's not great because essentially later, if we're talking like 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock, your body is getting ready to, well, your body's slowing down, is getting ready to go to sleep, which is like a slowing down process. And eating and digesting, it's kind of like quite an energy demanding process. And if you're eating late and then you're going to bed, you're kind of asking your body to do almost like two things at the same time, which it can do, clearly it can do. But it's a little bit confusing, and it can be a bit like harder to digest. Your body will digest, you know, it'll be fine. But you might find that because you are full, you won't sleep as well. Or it will be harder for you to go to sleep. And that's kind of the grain of truth. Devil's advocate here, I would say, if you're hungry, it's also really hard to sleep. Okay? And that's kind of the thing I wanted to say first about nutrition in general and those myths, that nothing is black or white. We often talk about black or white thinking. In nutrition, really, I think the true nutrition, correct nutrition, should never be black or white. It's, and I always joke, and you've probably heard me say that on Instagram, but with me, it's always embracing the 50 shades of gray. It's always gray. It's literally always gray. And that's why I don't have millions of followers, because it's actually really boring to gray. You know, you are like shiny things, and I don't have any shiny things to sell you. I've only got gray. Just different shades of grey. So yeah, and I'm guessing all of my answers today are going to be kind of grey. So just get ready for that. So there is a grain of truth. However, when people bring that to me, they're not talking about digestion. They are talking about essentially calories and whether or not they're going to gain weight if they eat later. And in my CBT kind of style, usually I ask them, you know, what they mean by this and da da da. And often people say to me, well, you know, what's the point? I do nothing. I'm literally just going to lie down. I'm just going to sleep. What is the point? And I go, okay, that's interesting. So you do nothing. And they go, no, I do nothing. And I say, okay, so do you die then overnight? And they go, no, because, well, of course I don't die overnight. I go, no, but you said nothing, you know, like, so you agree, you are doing something. What you mean is, actually, I'm not going to go on a treadmill. I'm not going to go and exercise. But you are not dead, so you are doing something. Even when it looks like you're doing nothing, you're doing something. Your body is doing a lot of stuff when you are seemingly doing nothing. You are digesting. You are processing information. You're repairing, you know, depending on your age. You're growing. Lots and lots of stuff is happening. And I'm afraid in the body, nothing comes for free. So whenever something happens in your body, it costs something, and that is energy. And so you do need energy at night to do all those things.
Well, and it's also a prolonged period of time that you're not eating. Like, you know, let's say you sleep for 8 hours, that's 8 hours of your body not getting any fuel. So you kind of need to give it something before bed to then make sure it get, you know, it's got enough to go through the night.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, you can fast for hours as well. You can, but it doesn't mean you should. Why do that? Why get, you know, like you in your car, why drive until the very end, until, you know, the light has been red and it's flashing and you're thinking, oh my God, am I going to make it to Tesco? Why do that when you could, you know, go in and get fuel when, you know, the tank is looking a little bit empty? Mm-hmm. A bit safer. I'd say. So no, you're not going to gain weight by eating later. And then, you know, this sort of silly me would say, okay, well, what happens in Spain? You know, they eat quite late, and you know, sure, I'm sure they have some overweight people there, but they also have people who don't are not overweight, but they're fine. So why couldn't we do that in the UK? Then it's a matter of preferences. It's a matter of culture. You know, obviously, you know, people might have guessed, not just because I'm wearing a stripy top, but because of my accent, I'm French. In France, we eat a bit later than in the UK, but not quite as late as in Spain. That's cultural preference. I've been living in this country for so long now, and I've got kids, which means that, you know, I had the same routine as everyone. So I'm used to eating relatively early. It works for me. If you ask me to wait until 8 o'clock, which is quite normal in France, before having dinner, I'd be struggling. So I often have to have a snack. If I'm out for dinner at 8, I will need.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Food around 6-ish, have 6, because that's when I'm used to eating. So, you know, it's habit, preferences, but no, you can eat later and you're going to be fine.
So, devil's advocate, putting my eating disorder hat on.
Mm-hmm.
So my response with that to that would be, from what I read when I was not well, mm-hmm. There's obviously like the piece that you said about digestion and stuff, and actually it can be quite uncomfortable to go to bed on a full tummy.
Mm-hmm.
But the kind of argument back about why it's good, quote unquote, to not eat late, is because then you've got a longer period of time that you're not eating. So realistically, you've got a shorter window in the day to eat. Therefore, overall, you're probably eating less calories. So the argument was, it's not necessarily the time, but it's actually like the window that you give yourself to eat.
So that would be, if you are not motivated by recovery, you're still very much like, I want to eat less. And that can work at restriction, sure. In fact, I believe that that's the principle of intermittent fasting to a big extent. I mean, I know there might be like other things, but essentially there's only so much you can eat in like 8 hours. So it prevents you from, you know, eating more than you should or you would like. Sure. That's very much, yeah, if you're not quite motivated by recovery yet.
I think that's a brilliant response in terms of what you said about, you know, that is probably not a pro-recovery thought process to have. And I think with, as you said, you know, before, a lot of these myths, they will have a shade of grey, and sometimes it is just matter-of-factly true. But it's looking at it from a recovery perspective. Whilst that is potentially true, is that actually helpful? Is that supportive for you to be engaging in that behaviour?
The other thing I wanted to say is also, for some people, and it might not be for everyone, but you also run the risk of becoming over hungry. And again, that is the risk of intermittent fasting, which, you know, I have seen a lot. When you get to essentially like you're driving your car and you don't know if you're going to make it to Tesco's, it's getting quite you're quite panicky about this. And then in terms of eating, when you're in that situation, you might decide to eat anything, you know, anything that you find. And also then your hunger cues or your satiety cues are kind of all over the place. So that's when potentially you could overeat or binge. And again, I see that a lot with intermittent fasting. People just go, oh my God, I'm so hungry. I just, doesn't matter if it's like a pizza, a penguin, you know, whatever. I just eat it all. It's never like carrots and stuff, because the body knows at that point that we can't be faffing around with carrots. We want energy. So we want, you know, things that aren't going to take hours to chew, that will release a lot of energy very quickly. So be careful with that.
And it's interesting that you say that, because that was one of the kind of things that somebody messaged in, was saying that, you know, I can't eat things like ice cream because as soon as I start, I can't stop.
Yeah, and that might be because of physical restriction. It's also potentially about mental restriction. And mental restriction is when you have labeled food as kind of good or bad, or, you know, I won't touch it. And ice cream is often the bad food. And so the problem with ice cream is that it's really tasty. So you might have it labeled as bad food, but you might want it sometimes, which is fairly normal because we all love ice cream. So you might decide, okay, I'm just going to have a little bit because it's really bad. But then you haven't had it for so long. Then when you start, you just go, oh my God, A, it's really good. B, I shouldn't have eaten that bad food. And now I've got it. So you know what? I may as well just eat the lot. And then after that, tomorrow I'll be good. Which means that the rest of the day, you might actually engage in other behaviors like this, because you're thinking, well, the day is over. So that's more like a mental restriction, and that could still happen if you're eating enough.
Yeah, I remember, this is only a few months ago now, but I remember saying to my partner, I'm not physically hungry, but I'm mentally hungry. Like, I am craving this so badly, but I have no physical hunger. And I was like, do you get that? And he was like, I don't really know what you mean. But is that something that's quite common that you see with clients, particularly with eating disorder recovery, of that sort of like not necessarily having that physical hunger, but that mental desire for those types of food?
Yeah, and sometimes I just think, you know what, it's normal. You know, we can, that's more like what I would call, I'm not sure it's a craving, it could be a craving, but sometimes it's what I would call kind of like, I'm emotionally hungry. You know, like, it's totally normal. And again, it's a really big bugbear of mine on social media when I see posts about eradicating emotional eating. I'm like, no, please, I don't want that. I want to eat emotionally. That's the point of eating, not the only point, but, you know, it's a big point for me. It needs to be emotional, and it's quite normal. Very, you know, I had some chocolate, like, often after my lunch today. Did I have it because of magnesium? No, I had it because it tasted really nice and I didn't need the chocolate, but it was an emotional thing. I love chocolate and it's almost like a little ritual. I often have chocolate after a meal. I don't have a massive bar, but sometimes I have a bit more chocolate than others because it's the day that requires more chocolate than others. And that's very emotional. We need other ways to deal with things than with food. But food can be part of the toolkit.
I think it's when you have one coping mechanism for difficult situations, emotions, that sort of thing. It's the same with exercise. You know, if exercise is your only coping mechanism, that's also not great. But just what you were saying about like emotional eating, I personally think the reason that there's such a gripe against it is because of the connotations of the word emotional, and people that are, you know, seen as extra emotional or like overly sensitive or all of that. That's kind of a negative. In society, it's seen as a negative trait. So I think that's why the emotional eating gets such a bad rep, because people think that someone's in absolute despair and they're using food to manage that. But actually, as you've just described there, like, emotional eating can be joy, it can be connection,
exactly.
It can be happiness. It's a whole range. It's not just using it in a way to manage negative emotions.
Yeah, that's funny. I never thought about that, but you're right. They're just seeing emotion as negative. And that's interesting. Then what does that mean? And is someone who is seen as emotional then someone who is seen in a bad light? Then are we not supposed to be emotional? That's interesting. And that's quite odd, because, you know, I think I'm quite emotional. I'd cry at the drop of a hat. I often joke, and I'm pretty sure I know it's true. I have cried at it. It wasn't a journalist. I think it was a B&Q advert.
Was it a Christmas one?
I don't know. I can't remember. I was crying so much.
Because
I
I
can't remember
cry
what it was
every
about.
year at
Oh,
John
yeah.
Lewis Christmas advert.
Of course.
That's, yeah.
Of course. And I can't see anything about animals on
No.
Instagram, which Instagram knows very well. So I'm always seeing like cats being rescued by the side of a road, which, by the way, I've never had. I've never managed to see to find a kitten by the side of the road. Still looking to find a puppy or a kitten. Happens to lots of people on Instagram, but it's never happened to me.
So you just
Without
see you going out of an evening looking for animals. It's interesting what you say about what did you say? I've distracted my
Oh, we're
kids.
doing well today.
You said something about you were talking about emotions, and it is interesting you say that actually, because I am a very emotional person. Like I am, and I don't say this in a negative sense because I'm very proud of it, but I am extremely susceptible to other people's emotions. I am such a sensitive person. Like what you were just saying there about animals. If I see a poorly animal, I will cry and I can't help it. Or if I see somebody suffering, like emotionally, it's so overwhelming. But interestingly, anorexia numbed all of that, and I didn't feel any emotion. So, in the same respect of some people will use food to navigate difficult emotions, other people will use food as a catalyst for positive emotions. I think you can also use food to suppress all emotion.
Yeah, and I think there's something there that also I worked out not so long ago. I think my anorexia started at a time when when life at home was really complicated and stressful and a little bit frightening. And I can't exactly remember when it started. And in my head, it was always about being thin, but actually, I think that was secondary. I think what happened is that I was someone who's, because I'm really emotional, I was really stressed out in that environment. And I now realize that my reaction to extreme stress is that my body shuts down, even now, but now it's different because I'm older and I can see it. But if I'm under a lot of stress, and I'm not just talking doing a little a presentation, like extreme stress, I can't eat. I can't eat. Literally, and now I will eat because I know better. But I think back then, when I was a teenager, I was under this stress because I'm very an emotional person and I feel it very acutely. I think I lost weight at the start because I couldn't eat. And then, I was a teenager and it was the 90s, so all of that was on top. The weight loss plus all of that kind of ignited the eating disorder, and then it became like a big thing. And I've got a post kind of half written on that. Often people talk about being full, or emotional eating, precisely emotional eating, eating your emotions. But I also think some people suffer with emotional fullness. Because when I am extremely stressed, and it happens till now, and it happened recently because a lot of my friends were ill and it really stressed me out, I felt full all the time. I knew better, so I was eating because, it's my job and I know in the background and I don't want to lose weight. But essentially, that's what it was. It was my way of coping, I think, was by, I guess, numbing. And I felt full, but it was an emotion, it was driven by emotion, not by food. Does that make sense?
I mean, I absolutely relate. The difficulty for me comes when people are like, oh, I wish I was like that.
Oh,
Like, I
yeah.
wish that I, had no appetite when I was stressed, or, I wish I didn't want to eat when something bad happened. And to me, that's a very triggering thing for somebody to say, because at the end of the day, you're in distress, you're in a sad situation, whether it's grief or stress or what have you. And it's that glorification of not eating. And it, you know, it doesn't matter that you're upset or what have you. Ultimately, you've got the golden nugget of not having an appetite, which is what people desire the most.
Yeah, and again, there's lots of things to say about that. First, it's again putting not eating and shrinking and essentially disappearing on a pedestal. It's also kind of putting eating disorders on a pedestal, but eating disorders themselves. And we all know it, that there is a hierarchy, right, of eating disorders. And the golden pedestal is always anorexia, which is crazy, because the others are, you know, as bad, but in just different way. But a lot of people would say, you know, well, I wish I was, you know, anorexic. Why do I have to have bulimia? Why do I have binge eating? You know, at least you're thin. So that there is this in that comment. And that's because we're always told that we need to be smaller, especially nowadays. But the other thing that I want to say about what you said is that, yes, when you're not eating enough, you are in distress, and it's actually really difficult. But, you know, when it happened to me a few months ago, I found it really hard to sleep. And so I would wake up in the middle of the night because my body would go, oh, hello, can I have a snack, please? And my body could feel I was hungry. And obviously then, because I was really stressed, I would just think about all the things that I was stressed about. So I was exhausted. So yes, potentially having too much food in the evening could, you know, make your sleep not great, but not having enough food, you know, is really tricky for sleeping. And I also would say carbohydrates are great in terms of sleep, because they will help certain vitamins to go up, to travel up in a little shuttle to your brain to bring this thing called tryptophan, and then it will help this thing called melatonin, which will help.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
If you sleep. So we actually do need some particular food in order to sleep. And I think carbohydrate is the one that we need the most in order to sleep.
So pasta.
Yeah.
Why does it get so much fear thrown towards it? And is it actually a food that will make us gain weight?
Okay. So, well, there's no such thing as good or bad food, only bad amounts. That's it. That's what you need to dropped on. Essentially, that's true with pasta. Can you gain weight with too much pasta? Absolutely. Yeah. But also too much, you know, bread, or too much butter, too much beef, you know, like yogurt, you know, too much, you probably can gain weight.
Too much anything.
I think with like something like pasta, it's relatively easy to eat. You don't have a lot of chewing to do. And so people feel like they could eat pasta again, you know, a big load of pasta. But the reality is that if we gave people, you know, unlimited amount of pasta, they would stop at some point because it would get really boring and we would get full. I think the thing with pasta is, first it is carbohydrate, and that's kind of, you know, you're younger than me, but I would say your generation and generation, you know, after you, has been focusing on carbohydrate. Carbohydrates are the bad guy. In my days, it was all about fat. Now it's all about carbohydrate. I think we're moving on to ultra processed food now. So I think the other thing with pasta, I discovered that, or I realized that a while ago with a client because she referred to pasta as something you eat when you want to carb load. So you are into exercise, so you probably understand that. But if you do some endurance training, it makes sense to have your glycogen stores fueled up because you're going to need that. And for those who don't know, you know, when we eat carbohydrate, we use, you know, we use what we need, but it works what there is in excess right now is going to get stored for later. There's nothing bad about that. It's good. We have a store, we can use it later. And often athletes will use pasta precisely for the reasons I mentioned, because it doesn't require a lot of effort. There's not a lot of chewing. You don't have a lot of fiber that your body has to handle. And so I think a lot of people have associated pasta with carb loading, which is a little bit not far-fetched, but it's like adding 2 and 2 and making 5. It doesn't quite add up. Pasta is just, let's go back. It's just a grain, you know. That was, first of all, it was just happy growing in its field, and then we've just harvest it, and then we crush it, we make a flour, and then, you know, it's mixed up with, you know, depending on the pasta, maybe egg, but let's go with just water, and we make pasta. That's just what it is. It's just basically crushed up wheat. That's it. Nothing too scary. It's just very natural, first of all, and that sometimes it's quite helpful for people to just see that it's actually just flour. There's nothing really wrong with it. The funny thing is, often people say to me, so I ask them to rank carbohydrate, and they go, now pasta is a big bad buddy, we don't like that. And you've got like white rice, white pasta is the worst, and then you might have brown pasta, and then you'll have rice, but it's brown rice, and then you might have rice noodles and then lentil pasta, you know, those kinds of things. And then you've got couscous, that's, you know, that's much nicer. And then you're going to have quinoa. And I'm always interested in couscous. People go like, I will not have pasta. No way. But couscous is fine. Couscous is fine. And I go, why is it fine? Because that's healthy. And I go, okay, that's cool. Love couscous. Great. Keep having couscous. But just so we're clear on this, what's couscous? What is it made of? And they go, I don't know, like couscous stuff. Like, well, couscous tree. I don't know. And I go, well, it's just so you know, it's basically like rolled up pasta. And usually they're horrified by that. But then it's quite useful, because I just go, look, you've been having couscous all this time and you've been okay. So what about if we tried pasta? And look, if it all goes wrong, if you've gained like 20 kilos by next week, you know, we don't have to have pasta again. I've never had anyone for whom it's happened, so I feel quite confident about that one. And we just will try it, because there is nothing wrong with pasta. It's just another form of carbohydrate. And the thing is, with my clients, I ask them to have carbohydrate at every meal. And it's not just with my clients. I ask them to do that because I think it's quite normal. I will do that myself, and I'm not in recovery. I'm not trying to gain weight, but I will have carbohydrate at every single meal, because it provides me with energy. It provides us with energy. The body needs glucose, and we get that from carbohydrate. So whatever it is, if it's quinoa or pasta, it will get broken down as glucose, and the body will be like, oh, thank you for that. I can now do stuff. I can, you know, let the heart beat and run around and do yoga, whatever you want to do. And then if I've got a bit too much floating about, I'll put it in my stores, and then we can use it later. And also, by the way, we use it when we're sleeping, because we're not waking up to have snacks. And so the body, as I said, doesn't die overnight, and we don't wake up feeling that we need a snack, because the body has already like a built-in snack in the form of glycogen, and we don't know it's happening, but essentially we are releasing that glycogen during the night so that we can have a nice good night's sleep, and we don't have to wake up to have a cereal bar. The body knows what it's doing. We don't have to kind of mess around and micromanage everything.
I think that's so interesting what you said about pasta and couscous. And I'm going to hold my hands up and say I was exactly the same. But I think it's the media. The media makes you believe that things like pasta are bad and things like couscous, they're a health food, you know, particularly things like quinoa and what have you, lentil pasta, all that crap, which, by the way, I think is absolutely disgusting.
It's really tangy.
Oh, it's so, yeah, really gross. But I do think it is the media, and I think it goes back to what you raised a point earlier about your social media account. And I think that the difficulty we have as like nutritional professionals and dietitians is that when you have people saying, like, for example, pasta is bad and eating past a certain amount, a certain time will make you gain weight, that's a really quick thing to be able to take on board, and you're like, okay, another rule for me, cut out pasta, cut out eating pasta a certain time. Whereas when you come along and say, you know, it's actually okay to eat pasta and it's okay to eat a little bit later, people are like, well, where's my answer? But
exactly,
what can I take from that? I cannot just kind of use that to try and lose weight. And all of these you know, messages that are being put out, they're very sexy, and they have people that have perfect physiques, and so it's quick information that people can digest and take away with them and feel like, oh, my problems are solved. Whereas when you say it's actually not the pasta that's the issue, and actually having a balanced diet is really good, people are like, well, that's not sexy.
No, and also you're wearing a cardigan, you know, what the hell, you know, you're not in your bra, so what are you doing? You don't understand Instagram. But yeah, that's it. It's I think we have so much information available to us that it's really difficult. And I sympathize with people. It's difficult. So you want black and white. You want someone to say, no, you can't have sugar. It's terrible for you. In as much as you kind of are thinking, oh no, I quite like sugar, it is quite easy to go, okay, the rule is clear. I can't have sugar, then it means it's easy. Whenever I see sugar, I go, no. Whereas someone like me comes along and go, well, no, it's, you can have sugar. Obviously, don't go mad and just have a kilo of caster sugar every day. But you can have biscuits, and sometimes you might have more biscuits than others, and that's okay. That's a bit like, what are you talking about? That's not helpful. You're making my head hurt. And I get that. But that is the reality of things. You have to make choices. And also, I think that's important to know that it's okay to get things wrong. It's not like you have to have the perfect diet. I don't have the perfect diet, sometimes on purpose, and sometimes just can't be bothered. You know, some weekends I don't have like hardly any vegetables. It just happens. And it, you know, is it a good idea? Probably not. But am I going to die? Certainly not. Am I going to be unwell? Probably not. You know, so it's not a big deal. And I like errors, because errors help us learn. You know, if I don't have any vegetables for the weekend, I might feel a bit like, and actually it means that vegetables do make me feel good. And I probably should have some sometimes when I don't feel like eating them, because I know that they make me feel quite good. It's okay.
Yeah, I think, and that's such a big thing I hear in recovery, is wanting to have the perfect diet and feeling like anything you eat has to be perfect, because otherwise it is wasted calories. And I think breaking out of that mentality can be quite difficult. You know, I remember saying to my therapist when I was very ill, I was like, I don't understand what people mean by enjoying their food. Like, I would much prefer to eat a bowl of lettuce than to eat a bowl of ice cream. And she was like, but that's not because you're enjoying it more. That's because your eating disorder is so loud right now that you eating a bowl of lettuce doesn't bring up negative thoughts, whereas eating the bowl of ice cream does. But realistically, you're not actually enjoying the bowl of lettuce. It's just, you know, more peaceful than eating the bowl of ice cream, because your eating disorder then gets activated and is like, what the hell have you done?
And the reality is that we need to come to a situation whereby we have both. We have the lettuce and the ice cream, and we enjoy them both. We need both for our sanity and for our health. And often people talk about health as physical. They mean physical health. But health is also mental health. And me never having brownies or ice cream it's not going to be great for my mental health because I love those things. So I will sort of deny myself those things. And just having the lettuce and all that, oh, maybe I'll have like the perfect physical health. But if my mind is always thinking, oh, but I could have brownies, should I have brownies? That's not good for my mental health. So can I really say that I'm healthy if my mental health is all over the place because I'm always thinking about brownies, even though I have the perfect physical health? I'd say no. But again, it's the gray, that's the white and that's the black. And what we want is the gray whereby we can enjoy salad and quinoa and also brownies.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, I hate using this word, but it's balance, isn't it? I mean, what on earth is balance? I don't know. But, you know, a salad of just lettuce is not a meal. Whereas a salad with some form of carbohydrate, some form of protein, you know, some fats on there, that's a really good meal. So that doesn't have to be something that is restrictive, or it doesn't have to be something that is quote unquote bad. And as you said, you know, enjoying brownies and ice cream, that's also totally okay. But it's not just living on brownies and ice cream, or not just living on lettuce, because, you know, if you just live on lettuce, to be fair, I don't think that you would have very good physical health. It's kind of finding that happy medium, and finding the things that you enjoy.
Yeah, and balance is going to mean different things for different people. And also food availability is also important in terms of perfection because you were talking about balance with the protein and the carbohydrate and stuff, which is totally true. But I was kind of thinking, oh, you know, with my lunch, did I have everything? And the thing is, I didn't have enough protein, and sometimes my protein is probably a bit blah. But I kind of make it up later on. If you enjoy toast, yeah, you can have toast. If you think that you want some protein and you don't want to have eggs with your toast, let's say, nothing stops you from having yogurt on the side with some nuts and stuff. Then, yeah, you've got your protein, you've got your carbs, you've got your fats, you know, happy days, that you're done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like you say, it's about doing it so that it's what's right for you. And I think that in recovery, that is a big learning curve of working out what works for you, and trusting, as you've said, that, you know, your body knows what it wants and what it needs. So thank you so much for chatting to me. That was absolutely fantastic. Oh, I've got a fennel sticker on my
How
jumper.
much did it cost?
Oh, it's just the barcode, actually. I've
Okay.
made a bean stew for dinner. I did that before we were
Oh,
chatting.
lovely.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining me. It's honestly such a pleasure to chat. Where can people go to find out more about you?
So I mostly live on Instagram. I'm too old for TikTok, I'm afraid. So I am the eating disorder nutritionist, and that is my handle. And otherwise, I have a website which is the eating disorder nutritionist.co.uk. And yeah, that's it really.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, and I hope you have a very nice evening.
Thank you. It was lovely chatting to you. Have a lovely beans.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode on the Full of Beans podcast. I really hope you did enjoy it. As a little reminder, this is not a replacement for therapeutic advice, so please do seek support if you are struggling, and know that there will always be somebody there to listen. Many thanks once again to our podcast sponsor, Nightingale Hospital. Have a lovely week, and I will see you next week for another episode of the Full of Beans podcast.